are listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Create Here. Produced by artists and curators from Big Car Collaborative, Create Here is your place to listen to conversations with people making intriguing, innovative, and impactful things happen on the cultural front in Indianapolis, Indiana, and beyond. Find out more and access additional episodes at WQRT.org.
Hello, welcome to Create Here. This is Shate Marsh, co-founder of Big Car Collaborative and director of programs and exhibitions. We are joined today by two really special guests, both artists, and recently jurored our Power Plant grants. First, I want to introduce you to Amy Kligman, who's been executive director, artistic director at Charlotte Street Foundation in Kansas City, Missouri since 2015. Kligman's career and experience as an exhibiting artist and grassroots curator slash arts administrator spans 20 years of studio and exhibition work, independent curating and organizing, and artist-run projects. In 2011, Kligman was one of a team of five artist curators who established Plug Projects, an artist-run project space in Kansas City's West Bottoms that hosted a robust and nationally recognized calendar of exhibitions and artist-centered program. Also joining us is Ish Muhammad, a self-taught artist residing in Northwest Indiana. Muhammad's work, post-graffiti abstract expressionism, is exhibited in galleries, museums, and site-specific installations nationally. He is a founding member of Crazy Indiana Style Artists, and Indiana Style Artists is recognized as Indiana's first Latino art collective. Thank you both. And also, I almost forgot, is Big Car executive director and artist Jim Walker, who we are very lucky to have join us today because he has a background not only as an artist, but as a journalist.
Thanks, Shate.
I'm going to start out with a general question, and then we'll get into your individual practices as artists, and then we can move into some of, you know, maybe more professional positions that you might
hold. Sounds good.
So today, you had a glimpse into the Indianapolis art scene. What was your feel for it? Like, what was your takeaway looking at these applications and artists' offerings that we have here?
I was really excited to be a part of this process and to see what is happening in Indianapolis. I'll admit that coming into it, I really didn't know a lot about what was happening here. I was excited to see a lot of energy in the artist-run spaces. I think that's something that I just have a passion for and am excited about. And I think it's a really flourishing community here for that. So that was exciting to see.
Yeah, I would agree with Amy. It was exciting for me. I tend to hang out with older artists, so it was nice to see younger artists with newer ideas and newer approaches to being creative, and the diversity in each grant applicant was exciting for me.
And both of you are artists, so can you tell us a bit about your practice as artists, and whoever wants to go first.
Well, I'm a self-taught artist, pretty much hip hop. Grew up in New York, so born in the late '60s. So was really there when it was starting to be formed. So, and where I lived was Lower East Side, New York. So not only that, but you also had the punk rock scene and the gallery scene, which is all kind of just around there, you know, as you head to like the Highland Tunnel in that area. So as a little kid, all of that played a big influence in how I looked at what it meant to be creative and to be expressive. Fast forward to today, I do take some of that and use that energy in a more abstract form, and create a new language that hopefully people can enjoy and look at. Where with graffiti, it was just writing my name all caps. you know, or with my crew, we all write in our name in all caps. And now when I approach my work and my study, I'm really trying to capture a pulse, an idea, an emotion with the paintings. And that's why I kind of call it post-graffiti. Because it's not necessarily graffiti, but it's got that graffiti rhythm, graffiti energy. So sometimes people look at it and think it says something. And I always say, it says exactly what you see.
You know, I was wanting to talk a bit about, you know, graffiti just in general has gone from sort of this anti-establishment art form, you know, that, you know, might have been happening under the radar. And then now it's gone more mainstream. And, you know, it's kind of happened that way with art in galleries as well, too. Like, how has that been for you to see and deal with throughout your career as an artist?
Not for me, the blessing was that at a young age, building a creative community was important. So, you know, as a teenager, you build that creative community the way that you know how. And that was through writing your name, you know, and building that identity. And as you grow, you find new ways of expanding that community and bringing more people into that community. And with the goal of still maintaining your identity, but finding new ways to express yourself and share that language that you're building. So fast forward to now, I think what we're seeing more than anything is people have learned how to use spray paint and they've learned how to use it real good. So they may not necessarily be linked to like the graffiti writing culture, the style writing culture, but they have branched off some of the tools that are used in the graffiti writing culture to build that identity, to build that crew, to, yeah. So hopefully that helped. I feel like I went off on a tangent.
So Amy, the one thing that we've been talking about is some parallels between your organization and what we do here at Big Car. And can you talk a little bit about the balance between being an artist and an administrator and what it takes for you to wear those multiple hats in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, my sort of administrator role evolved out of a lot of sort of DIY scrappy roles. I'm an artist and I was always interested in being around other artists and was a part of like first kind of curating shows independently that were just like, really, it was kind of about, I wanted to learn more about the artists that I liked, and this was a good excuse to bring them together, you know, and it kind of started out that way. And then, you know, I think, I moved to Kansas City and, there were opportunities to do independent curating there. But, through that, I met some other people who were interested in that. And we had an artist run space and I think that I just really became passionate about doing that. It was something about the community role that filled a need for me that, you know, just making art myself, which I love and have a passion for, it didn't do. So, I mean, I think it's hard to maintain like all those different aspects of my practice in terms of just like time and finite capacity of human beings, you know, but I think that they feed each other, you know. It's like, I'm very happy to be in a role where, you know, the practice that I have that is personal to me, informs what I do in my day job, and my day job informs my practice too. And I think mm-hmm. that all feels really good and healthy and holistic. And I like that about the way I live my life. And my husband is also a painter and, has been in different aspects of this, kind of curatorial work with me. And, I don't know, I think that we operate in our lives very holistically. It's like, it's all sort of part of the same soup, and mm-hmm. that feels good.
Amy, can you talk a bit about your work as an artist? I really like, it has a very, a rich color palette that I really am attracted to too. Like I really, love the makeup of your work just as an artist. Can you tell us more a bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think my work, so I did, I grew up making art, but, I kind of was building a commercial practice. So like I knew that, I went to art school, but I went for illustration, and, I was really interested in pattern and surface design and color. And, anyway, I started off my career in a commercial art way. And I was learning a lot about color, about pattern, about like sort of what it means emotionally, about the history of those things. Those became tools that I would then use in my fine art practice. I'm also really interested in like ideas about class and ideas about, celebrations and milestones and rituals. And, all those things were kind of fed by, again, like things I was learning in the day jobs I had as an illustrator. I worked for a greeting card company for 15 years and, you know, like there were things that I was learning, through that, you know, have then now informed, both my aesthetic, which I think, you know, kind of pulls from really celebratory moments or these milestone moments a lot, which does have like, you know, kind of a, I don't know, like a lot of color associated with it, a lot of like, energy, you know, like, cause you think about like when you're having a birthday party or it's a holiday, like there's an energy that is captured in all of that, you know, sort of the things that bring those rituals to life. So, anyway, I'm picking up on those cues in my work.
And Ish, you know, with your work and starting out, in, you know, with graffiti and like getting your name out there, how did you move from, unconventional galleries, like unconventional art, canvases to the gallery space? And what, like, when did that become attractive to you? And when did your like practice change where you're like, I'm an artist and I'm going to create these for a gallery space versus out in the world?
So two things. One, Crazy Indiana Style Artists, my crew, we've always known that we were going to do something. Not necessarily knew exactly what, but we knew we was going to do something. And also, South Shore Arts, which is an art center in Munster, Indiana, they supported us almost as an incubator. So they provided fail-safe environments for us to see our work differently. You know, South Shore Arts is one, the Savannah Gallery in Gary, which is Indiana University Northwest. They provided us platforms to tell our story the way we felt it should be told, with no limits. And it just allowed us to see our work differently. Everything from scrapbooks. We got this crazy collection of flyers for hip hop sets from the 80s and just putting them on the wall. You know, I used to write a lot of rap lyrics and just opening a notebook and putting it up on the wall, and pictures and stickers and, you know, being from from our area, it's a steel town community. So you kind of learn how to do stuff, so, you know, so everything from making our own tools or cutting or vinyl cutting, or we need a you know, a big styrofoam. How can I find a 5 foot block of foam? It tends mm-hmm. to pop up, mm-hmm. you know, and then you figure it out, you learn on the fly. And so we had a lot of fail safe environments, and support from each other. So that helped us. My first canvas, was given to me by, Marco Salazar, Buster. He's no longer active in the crew, but that was like my first canvas to paint. So, and I made a painting and from there we started doing more paintings, and we didn't necessarily have at that time, a space to show our work. You know, all of us were pretty much self-taught or still kind of, you know, yeah, nah, but that's that graffiti stuff. That's not really what was recognized as gallery quality work. But we felt it was. So we would find ways to show it. We'd get an empty store at a shopping mall, and we'd show our work at the shopping mall. We created our own gallery, Kisa Gallery, you know, Crazy Indiana Star Art Gallery, Kisa Gallery, and we learned. You know, I had a little bit of electrical background, so we, you know, we built our walls, and you know, you kind of just do the research. Well, what's a good wall? Oh, I got to put a half inch wood, behind the plywood. All right, I'm gonna do that. Oh, the lights should be like this. This is the temperature. Okay, that's what we're gonna do. And so the gallery looked real nice, and we just learned, we experimented, and we even invited artists from Indianapolis, Berlin, Mr. Marvel. I don't know, you know, that's from way back, but you know, their artwork was interesting. So we would take chances. We would invite the public. We would learn. We had a giant stage. So another activity that we did was, there wasn't really a platform for bands that are starting out. So what we did is like, all right, you could play, and we get 50% of whatever's at the door. So if nobody came, then nobody came, no money. But if it got packed, then there was some money. And it was really more to help the band kind of realize that that's an important part of your music, you know, having that audience, so that way you can kind of self-fund your projects.
Yeah. One thing that I think we all have in common is we're working in areas of cities that were forgotten about or were neglected. We're in this space right now, seeing slides that are playing, and we see things from Gary. And we talked before, Amy, about parts of Kansas City that artists moved into that were just basically left behind and forgotten about. And then we're sitting in a space like this in the Tube Factory. That was another one that was just abandoned after its use wasn't necessary as much as it was. When you think about your work and how that relates to this thing that's pretty specific to the Midwest, can you talk a little bit about, you know, why it's important to use those spaces or to, in some cases, adorn those spaces with public art or graffiti art?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I think about a lot in terms of making art in the Midwest and having art spaces in the Midwest is that, you know, there's not the same kind of maybe density as there is in, you know, other art centers. But one thing you probably do have access to is different kinds of space. And I don't know, one thing that I thought was really rich and exciting about being an artist in Kansas City is that, you know, there were spaces that were, you know, not exorbitant to engage. And Charlotte Street, where I work now as the executive artistic director, there's a history with that space of working in, you know, kind of empty downtown spaces. I think that I don't know. There's an energy that came from that, like from artists, you know, kind of just popping up in places that there wasn't anything happening. There were like abandoned retail spaces or abandoned industrial spaces. You know, I think now we are also thinking a lot about like the implications of like gentrification and things that sometimes come with artists, you know, inhabiting some of those spaces and how the ripple effects can kind of, you know, kind of get out of control. And I think that I see a lot of cities in the Midwest now trying to kind of get a handle on that and catch a balance of we need this art and these things to exist and we want them to have these spaces or have space just exist, right? And then I think there's simultaneously a desire for things to genuinely be of the neighborhoods they're in. And, you know, how do we make that happen? And I don't know. I think what's exciting to me now as I'm looking at spaces in the Midwest, and this is one of them, is how rich that can be, you know, when there is a genuine effort and an interest in figuring things out from the neighborhood, and what can and should this be? What is an art space anymore anyway, you know? And I think that there's some really cool things, and maybe I see them happening mostly in the Midwest or in these smaller cities because I don't know, there's space there to play things out and to try it and to, you know, I don't know, figure out what works.
Mm-hmm. And so Amy, can you tell Charlotte Street Foundation, what is mm-hmm. Charlotte Street Foundation?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit more about Charlotte Street. So, Charlotte Street Foundation is an organization, that started off as a grant making entity for artists. It was 25 years ago. It's been around for a while. Those grants, the first grants were grants to individual artists. And it was sort of a response to when the NEA stopped funding individual artists. It was like, how are artists going to do their work? Because, you know, that to think that artists are going to like sell work and that's going to like be how they maintain a practice is just like, well, it's just not happening. Wouldn't it be great if it were, but it's just not. And so there was this idea. David Hughes Jr., who's the founder of Charlotte Street, was really inspired by actually a home of artists, like a man named John Pushek, who was an artist in Kansas City, who had a home where he would host artists and they would come and they would, you know, kind of support each other. They would feed each other. They had music. It was a community, right? And I think David was really inspired by this idea that artists were supporting each other, but he was also like kind of troubled by it. Like, you know, they don't have a whole lot and they're having to like hold each other up and, you know, could the community support the artists more? So that's sort of like what started Charlotte Street. And then over the years, there were all these different like sort of programs and resources that, that added on to what it is. And now it's kind of this network of programs and space. Charlotte Street still does grant making, and we have a grant making program that's really similar to the Power Plant Grant, the Rocket Grants that we've been running for a while. But we also have a residency program where we give free space, studio space to artists for 2 years at a time. And we also have a really robust like exhibition, and performing like a performing space. So we do about 100 events a year that kind of span the scope of exhibitions, performances, workshops, panels, things like that.
And Ish, how did you come from New York to Gary? And tell us about Gary. What's going on in Gary and your city?
I came to Northwest Indiana, pretty much the way everybody ends up in Northwest Indiana. There's work in the mills for my dad. That was the hope. So we moved from New York to Puerto Rico and then from Puerto Rico to Northwest Indiana. So in Northwest Indiana, in Gary, Indiana right now, it's a nice place for experimentation, There's a lot of abandoned buildings. There's a lot of, it's an environment where, it is safe. It just doesn't look safe. So you can go and paint and, not necessarily be bothered. And because of just on the outside, how it looks, and it's more economics than anything, your work stays up longer because it's minimal, the amount of outsiders that are going to come into the city, specifically to travel into these areas where we like to paint. Mm-hmm. There's other organizations, you know, and Gary, Indiana, like the Miller Beach community has always been creative. That creative generation, it's slightly older now. So now it's coming in. It's this younger group. So you have like, the DK Devils, that really, and they're pretty much more of, they like going into abandoned areas throughout the whole planet and taking pictures of abandoned buildings and abandoned environments and just like this urban decay. And their home base is pretty much in Gary, and they, you know, they do a lot of work there. So you have our artists and organizers like Tyrell Anderson from Gary that's doing stuff. You have the Miller Beach Arts and Creative District that really focus on local artists showing their work. And so they provide a good platform for emerging artists to practice. You know, they're not going to get it right. The blessing is that the curator, Gary Henderson, he's a professional installer. He's a professional art handler. So he displays your work beautifully. And so that helps, because now you're building that eye that somebody already else has. And you're retaining that for when you get that chance to do it. We do a lot of graffiti in Gary, in the Bronx area, Midtown. And we create these unofficial festivals that really were the model for these modern festivals, art festivals that they have. We'll have some artists paint, we'll have some music, we'll have some food. Well, that's kind of what we used to do. We used to just find a strip, like even here in Indianapolis, we would do subsurface. You know, we'd paint in Tent City. That's organized by IWS, Matt Lawrence and Dan Thompson and Ben Long. And we'd paint. Somebody would pull out a grill and somebody would DJ, you know, and that was like our fest. And people would come, like the artists, and it was, nobody got paid. And we would come from, and Indianapolis is such a good spot, and because they'd come from Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, Chicago, because everywhere is like 3 hours and under to get to Indianapolis. And then the Fab Crew, they were such great hosts with beautiful walls that it was just this one area that was just a peaceful opportunity for fellowship. And it expanded. And I think a lot of people saw that and felt that. And I think some of that is what's being modeled today with the larger street art, public art mural festivals.
One thing I picked up on that you just said that I'd like you to talk more about, but really when I think about, I'd like both of you to talk about this is, you said that, you know, when you would create a piece, your work would stay up longer, you know? So with you know, can you talk a bit, both of you, about how, you know, there's the temporary, like everything's ephemeral in a way though. So even when you put together an exhibit per se, you know, it's temporary. So, but when you have something, like it's different for me, like when I put together an exhibit with an artist, I know it's temporary and there's like this birthing and then this loss, you know, essentially. But for you, you never know when you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
You know, can you talk a bit about like how you create something and then with the knowledge that you could lose it at any time and what does that mean to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think both on a personal level, like I have a series of work that was installation work. And I really loved making that work. I would use like party materials and I would repurpose them to create these like really dense installations. And I really liked that the space could be incredibly transformed in a short amount of time. And it felt special that like whatever happened in that space in that time was sort of finite and then it would go away. I do as an administrator or like as somebody who's like programming a space or being a part of programming a space, you know, we also see a lot of things like come and go through Charlotte Street. And I've even seen like spaces come and go, you know, and there is something about that that is like, I don't know, like a sense of loss or like a grief that happens when you put a lot of yourself and of your energy into a thing that that doesn't last. But I also think we put these things out there just knowing that, you know, they're there for a moment and people are responding to them in that moment. And like, that's sort of the thing that lasts. It's like the people. And I kind of feel like without the people, then it really would be sad. And maybe that's why things were so sad during COVID or like, you know, like that time period when we weren't coming together as much. It was really, I think it was really hard on artists, hard on everybody, obviously, for all of the reasons, right? But I think there was this thing where, it just felt like, it felt a little bit like nothing matters because it's not being shared. Right. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know, I'm very happy to be back in a space where sharing is happening again. It means that those things are mattering again in some way.
Yeah, that's good, Amy. Yeah. I always got a saying, I am here. Now, you know, does it matter? And does it matter is where all the communication really takes place, you know, because you can have somebody come with a bucket of beige and they can say, I am here. Now, you know, doesn't matter to you. I just buffed your stuff, you know? So there's always like this dialogue. Once you take that step to mark your environment, you know, and how it matters is important. So yeah, sometimes we lose it. It's how you lose it that's important. You know, there's been fights literally because somebody touched your painting in a way that felt disrespectful. You know, there's been strategies where you want to paint this wall, but I really can't afford to coat the whole wall with paint. So let me just mark it a little bit because I know they're going to come behind me and ice it for me so I can come back and paint it, you know, and use less paint. So that's the doesn't matter part. And I think that's the important part. One thing I found real interesting, initially, maybe about 7 to 8 years ago, in Gary, there was a concern because there was a lot of, we call it bombing. And that's when you just pretty much go out and throw just real fast, throw up letters, kind of bubbly looking letters. And you just, you know, you just kind of traveling and bubbling and bombing. So they hit me up and I was like, well, I find it super interesting that if you paid attention, most of this was occurring on buildings that were already psychologically abandoned. Mm. Like they had already incorporated in their visual landscape, being comfortable with the urban decay. But it wasn't until somebody kind of made you once again take notice that, hey, this urban decay is still here, that it mattered again. For me, I've most of the graffiti that's on that wall, they're gone. You know, they're gone. I'm glad that I'm able to save some as an image so that I can share like I'm doing today. But we know that it's here and it's going to be gone. But what's most important is creating that memory and that fellowship with your peers, and hopefully continuing to build. We call ourselves crew. And the root word of crew is crecer, which means to grow. So, you know, as a crew, we should be striving to grow. And if you're not growing with your crew, that means that you got to kind of find a new crew, you know? Yeah, because you're not growing, you know? So, and I think it's interesting, because how do I translate that to today? It's finding ways to continue to grow. I still find pleasure in writing my name on the wall, but I also find that there's other platforms. There's museums, there's galleries, there's other platforms to meet people that I may not have necessarily met. Today's a great example. I've met all these talented artists from Indianapolis that I may not have met, only because there may be age difference, cultural difference, you know, but here we were forced to talk, you know. It was like, I am here, now you know, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And that was such a great opportunity today. And once again, it's just kind of building a bigger crew so that we can continue to grow. So thank you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. The a lot of what we're talking about is really the social role of artists and of art, the bringing people together, the impact it can have. So maybe can you both talk a little bit about some of that? Is kind of it was a little bit incidental maybe at first, but maybe it's a lot more intentional now, knowing that as we went through things with COVID and as we're facing a lot of other issues all the time, that it seems like getting people together, connecting with each other is more important than ever, and like in our lifetime, mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because I think there's sort of a stereotype of like a lone wolf genius artist. Mm-hmm. Right. And, I do think that there's still a lot of artists who like part of making art is really the process for them. And it's like, they're going through a lot of things for themselves when they're making work. And I would say that for myself is true still. I think art making and art viewing like can play a lot of roles. But I do think that for me, like the sort of community aspect, like the aspect of art making that became art community making or art community participating in, just became like hyper important. And I don't know. I mean, I grew up in Southern Indiana, and it was a very small town. There were about, you know, 500 people in that town, and only a handful of them would have ventured to like make a mark on purpose, you know? And I think that for me, when I talk sometimes about going to art school and how like going to art school was like, oh my God, you know, like other people like this, like and other people get why I would have any desire to do this. And there was something about that was just deeply, I don't know, warming to me. It was like, it meant something to be in like communion with people that spoke my language, you know? And I think that becomes much harder when you're, you know, back out in the world. And I think it's important for artists not to completely sort of retreat into like a bubble of just artists. But I also think it's important for artists to like function in society as sort of this thing that's always churning up like ideas and pushing. You were talking earlier ish about like how artists or like your role on a certain group of people might sometimes be to just be like the risk taker, like the person who says the thing that nobody else is willing to say. And, you know, and I think that comes from artists being used to failing all the time. Yeah. Like, you know, like you have to fail 100,000 times before anybody ever like considers you an artist or says like, hey, like you're good at that. Like it means that you kept doing it enough that you suffered and failed and were bad at it 100,000 times. And so it's like, I think we're used to being okay with, you know, saying a thing that might not be 100% right or trying a thing that might not be 100% right. And that has a real function in society. And it's important for artists to be out in the world demonstrating that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would like you both to talk about is struggle. You know, Ish, you had mentioned that there, you had a piece at a museum that people had an issue with, but also at any point in your career, were you like, I just want to give up? And how did you pull through that? Because I think that's something a lot of artists go through, different times, and some artists do give up and they, you know, stop making. Have you gone through anything like that? Tell us a bit about your struggles, maybe just with, you know, maybe the public having an issue or, you know, just like, oh my gosh, almost like a, recall for words. Sorry. not an identity crisis, but, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, like existential crisis.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I've internally, I know I'm a creative being, and internally, and I know that I'm comfortable with showing my work and learning how to develop my visual language. The struggle for me was, you know, I was young. I was young and wild. So I was a teenage dad, you know. So at you know, 15, 16 years old, I was already a parent. And, you know, by the time I was 18, I was a parent of two. But, you know, and there was a time when I was a single dad raising three, you know. So then I married and now I was raising four. So the struggle for me was what really matters, what is most important for me. So the struggle was finding that balance of how can I be of all the roles at the same time. How can I be a father for my children? How can I be a crew member for my crew? I was going to school at the time, pursuing my degree in engineering. So how can I be that student? How can I be a husband? How can, you know, just how can I balance all those roles? So that for me was a real struggle in my 20s. And I was blessed because I found, or she found me, maybe, who knows, you know, she tells us she found me, you know, she saved me. But I'm blessed, you know, Stephanie and I, we've been married for 30 years. But she walked into a ready-made family. You know, she was 19 when we were dating, 20 when we married. And it was almost like, okay, there you go. You got three children, you know, and just that struggle and that support that she, you know, that she had to share. And I say that because it is important that you have that support from your peers or people that love you to give you that time or that that space to continue to be creative. And I had, and I received that from my wife. She gave me that space to continue to be creative and just chip away. I always say, you know, I didn't have no driver in my golf bag when it came to being an artist. All I had was irons, you know? So I just chipped away. I've been chipping away throughout the whole golf course. I'm so blessed. You know, because I have been able to exhibit in museums, you know, as a self-taught artist. Friends throughout the world that are creative, that are doing very well. So that's hopefully that helped. You know, I feel like I went on a tangent, but you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think like a struggle is an interesting thing. Like I have certainly had moments where like my work personally like was more or less visible or like more or less maybe accepted as something that was, you know, seen as art. You know, coming from a commercial background, I think there were times where I really like kind of second guessed, like, is this something that would be shown in an art, like, would this go in a gallery or does it feel like an illustration or like, you know? And I think at first, like a lot of my doubts were about that. And then later, you know, I think it kind of became this thing of like, well, now am I an artist or am I an administrator? Like, you know, like, what am I doing? Am I spending enough time on this thing or that thing to be this thing or that thing? And I think now maybe one thing I do know is that like, I make work. Like when there is time and space, that is the thing that I have the impulse to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I don't doubt myself as an artist anymore. And I'm also like not as interested in who sees me as an artist or where that stuff shows up. I'm like, listen, this is just a part of my life. This is something I'm doing now as an administrator, like, because that role is a lot more tied to the community and like, what am I doing if I'm not serving that community? In that space, I guess I am a lot more sensitive to, you know, is this working? Is this not? Is this something that is, you know, worth this or not? And there's definitely been times, especially in like when I first took this job at Charlotte Street, which was the first time I was actually like paid to be an administrator of an arts organization. I certainly had a lot of like insecurities about like, oh my God, you know, should I be the one that is doing this, you know? But what I know is that I love it and I keep doing it because I love doing it. And I think I get better at it because I love doing it. And I guess I trust that. I trust that, like, you know, you didn't start out great at anything. So like, you know, keep at it and you'll find your people that teach you the things and that you learn from. And hopefully there's something reciprocal going on there. But, you know, I think we all grow that way. And as an art community, we grow that way.
I think we're probably on like a wrap up question here as we conclude our conversation. One thing that we all have in common at this table is that we're Midwesterners, either originally or through another avenue to get here. But what does that mean, do you think, to be working in the Midwest and to be kind of part of this place and from, or to be kind of adopted into it over time?
I'll say the Midwest, everybody has a degree of ingenuity. And you really see that when you leave the Midwest. People from the Midwest, they're known for their work ethics. As an artist, when I travel, a lot of stuff is like, oh, this is easy. You know, it seems easy to kind of make something happen here. Mm-hmm. And I know half of it is because, you know, it's just about putting in work. And I think most people in the Midwest, they don't mind putting in the work and they don't mind figuring out as they go. They learn in real time. So just like you were saying, you know, you're not going to be perfect. Let's just start. And, you know, we'll create a feedback loop in our process. So we'll be tweaking and adjusting as we go. And before you know it, we're good. And I think a lot of Midwestern people think that way, whether they know it or not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would echo what you're saying about work ethic 100%. I think there's, and maybe it's not just a willingness to do it yourself, but because there is like a real payoff. Like there's, I mean, I don't know. I've never lived in big cities on the coast, but I know that part of the reason why I never have is because I had big ideas and I had things I wanted to do and I wasn't born with a trust fund. And so it was like, you know, I want a space that I can have impact in. And I feel like that's true here. And so I don't know, there is a sense that I as a Midwesterner, I as somebody operating in the space can like take it on and see something happen. I can see an impact. I can see what it does, you know? And I think that produces a willingness to keep doing it, right? Mm-hmm. So I do think that Midwesterners both have like a super strong work ethic, but there's also this sense of collaboration that I think is very special. Like in Kansas City, I see artists come together and I see artists teach each other things, whether or not they're trying to, you know, and there's like this generous spirit that comes with like, I'm a musician, you're a visual artist, we're going to collaborate and do things. And we'll both like kind of get richer that way. And, I could see that being something happening here too, where, you know, as people start to coexist and, you know, cross paths, there's not that same like sort of like sense of a scarcity mindset where it's like we all have to be so cutthroat that like, you know, there's so many of us trying to get to these like few little resources. That's not the feeling I get from things happening in the arts in the Midwest. And I love that about it because I feel like we can be more of a space where, you know, it is a space where everybody could win, you know? And I won't say everybody is, because I do think that there's still a lot of like systemic problems that exist that hold folks back. But I think it is a space where in a future people could be operating in a way where everyone wins. And that's what I want.
That's cool.
Before we wrap up, what are some recommendations to our listeners, like books, even events or music that you would recommend?
Let's see. When I think of books, there's a professional development book for artists that I really like called Art/Work. It's for visual artists. But it's a book that I give to people a lot because I'm like, this is amazing. I think as an administrator, I would point people towards Adrienne Marie Brown's Emergent Strategies, which I love. I think actually anything she writes, please read. But like, I think that book, you know, it definitely like opened my brain up to like, what are these new ways of thinking and working? And then I guess events like, well, A, please come to Kansas City and I'll tell you all about events in Kansas City. There is the Midway Fair, which is happening in Chicago in September, and that's an artist run, fair. And I know Big Car and Tube Factory is going to be part of that. And Charlotte Street's a part of that. And I'm really excited to see what happens with that. It'll be the first time I personally am getting involved in it. So I don't know what to think yet, but I'm excited to see what comes of it.
I'd say keep finding ways to create fail-safe environments for the youth. I'm 53 and God willing, I still got a couple miles ahead of me, but really think about that 15-year-old, that 20-year-old. Look at all the runway they have in front of them. So just find ways to be a sponsor, find ways to be a mentor, to be a cheerleader. And just so that way you can kind of do some knowledge transfer. We've learned so much. You know, so we really got to find ways to transfer that and engage them, because if not, it's going to fade away. the energy. So that's probably the one thing I think about more than anything right now is how can I get these kids into it, you know, or how can I help them? What are they into? How can I help them?
And can you tell, one last thing, can you tell our listeners where to follow you on social media or where to find your work online, please?
Yeah, I have two Instagram accounts because I have one that I call the art account, and I have one that I call the whole person account. So if you just want to look at my art, that's Amy Kligman at Amy Kligman. And for like Charlotte Street and, you know, pictures of my kids, you can Amy the Klig. and then Charlotte Street has a website at charlottestreet.org for all of the kind of events and things that we have going on there.
So for me on Facebook, Ish Muhammad, on Instagram, at Ishrock, ISHROCK.
All right. Thank you both so much. Appreciate your time and helping us, you know, support the Indianapolis arts community.
Thank you so much.
Very cool.